Welcome to Doc Talk. I'm Juliana Grassi, and for this episode, I speak with Dr. Eric Prather, who was invited to present at the Associated Professional Sleep Society's 2022 annual meeting, where he focused on sleep in the time of COVID, an update on how sleep affects the immune system. In addition to his role as Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the University of California, San Francisco, and serving as the Interim Director of UCSF Center for Health and Community, he also helps to run a sleep clinic at the institution.
So I'm, you know, really honored to be presenting at the Sleep 2022, which is kind of like the main sleep conference for the United States, and lots of international people come. This is part of the kind of educational piece that precedes the conference. And so my session is going to be focused on sleep in the immune system and how it is related to this ongoing and protracted pandemic that we're dealing with. Because I think there are a lot of insights from what we know from kind of human and animal studies that sleep is really important and impacts the immune system, making potentially people vulnerable to both kind of becoming infected if exposed, and then with relationship to kind of the rollout of vaccinations and how sleep may play a role in how people respond to those.
Absolutely. And so now that we have encountered the COVID-19 pandemic, I was wondering if that's changed anything in terms of the research landscape for sleep, or if that's just highlighted, you know, things that have already been going on that people have been investigating.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, certainly sleep has been kind of one of the, you know, factors that's been disrupted during this time, right? I mean, I think we can all remember back how perhaps we had difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, or our sleep schedules were changed because we were working from home and didn't have to commute, all of those things. I mean, certainly some people had kind of worse sleep. Some people actually had more opportunity for sleep. And, you know, that has impacts on our kind of health and well-being. You know, there's a long history of research focused on sleep and susceptibility to infectious illness. And so this pandemic has really just provided opportunities to try to understand that better. You know, I think there are some kind of really important kind of empirical studies that demonstrate that when people don't get enough sleep, they may in fact be susceptible to infections. In fact, we've done some research where we've kind of measured sleep in the world, giving people kind of basically kind of research grade Fitbits that measure kind of inactivity that we use to estimate sleep behavior. And, you know, what we did was we recruited about 170 people that were all healthy and measured their sleep for 7 days, and then brought them into our laboratory and exposed everyone to a known amount of rhinovirus. So this is the virus that causes the common cold. Okay. And so we had people all get this kind of shot up their nose, and then we quarantined them for, you know, depending on the study, like 4 to 6 days, and then just tracked who ended up getting sick. So everyone gets exposed, not everyone becomes infected, which I think is really interesting. And then, but then of those who get infected, only a subsample of them actually develop what we define as a clinically verified cold. And so, you know, we do that objectively by kind of measuring mucus production every day, and kind of nasal congestion and that type of thing. And what we find is that, you know, people who sleep 6 or fewer hours per night on average, and again, this was measured before they came into the study to get kind of a habitual amount of sleep, were about 4 times more likely to actually get sick than people who slept more than 7 hours. And so, you know, this is really important when we think about the COVID-19 pandemic, because we are controlling exposure. That's one of the things that's, you know, really hard to do in out in the world. But, you know, we have kind of pretty clear evidence that at least in that study, and probably for, you know, is relevant to this, kind of when people don't get sufficient amounts of sleep, you know, they're just more susceptible.
And do you know of any research or any investigations surrounding like that with COVID-19, or who is getting sick and who isn't, and how relative to the amount of sleep that they get?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so first, the study I described, they have not done with the COVID, with SARS-CoV-2 virus. They have in the UK, which is you know, famous for doing these types of viral challenge studies, have done a viral challenge study with SARS-CoV-2, but did not include sleep in kind of trying to understand who gets sick. You know, so then that means we have to rely on kind of large population-based studies where, you know, maybe an electronic medical record, we have information about sleep or sleep behavior, or, you know, the UK Biobank is another opportunity where they've kind of tried to phenotype sleep. And then, you know, because they have thousands and thousands of people, are able to kind of have a sample sufficient enough of those who have either reported that they've gotten COVID or they have evidence by a PCR test. And in that case, you know, the data is not as clear, right? That, you know, there is some sense that perhaps things like daytime napping has been associated with increased risk for a positive case. There is a study that is currently in a preprint from a combination of the UK Biobank and then another genomics biobank, where there does seem to be some relationship between insomnia and risk for a positive COVID case. But again, that hasn't been peer reviewed. And so I don't know how that'll shake out at the end. You know, and so, you know, rather than focusing on that, I think probably the easier question to ask with respect to COVID has been in the context of COVID vaccines, right? Because that also will tell us something about the immune system and, you know, certainly are critical for protecting people because vaccines, you know, use kind of parts of the virus to kind of train the immune system. You know, a lot of the kind of things should be similar, and we can do that in a much more controlled setting.
Would you say that's the direction that this research is going?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like it's challenging. So our group here at UCSF is running a large study of healthy individuals that we're following through the COVID-19 vaccination process and through their boosters, where we're trying to identify kind of psychological, behavioral, including sleep, and kind of biological predictors of who mounts and maintains kind of protection based on, say, neutralization antibody assays, as well as T cell immunity. But the challenge is there just really aren't very many of those types of cohorts because they had to be, you had to be able to set them up as the vaccine rollout was happening. I mean, at that time, we started back in March of 2021, you know, we got emergency funding from NIH and we just set it up and kind of were on the radio, we were on television, we were doing anything we could to get people who, you know, when everyone was racing to get their vaccines. And we focused on people that were 50 and older, because, you know, certainly we know that the immune system kind of breaks down as we get older. And so likely kind of the things that we're interested in trying to understand prediction about might be more relevant when the system is a little bit more dynamic or kind of breaking down at some kind of rate. And so, you know, we don't know of another cohort that where we have kind of phenotyped all of these things about them before they actually got vaccinated. Now, my guess is that, you know, there'll be tons of studies about how people respond to boosters, right? Because there was kind of more time to kind of get that in place.
Right.
But kind of having like an actual naive population was a little bit more challenging. I mean, I'm hopeful that we'll learn something about sleep and circadian science as it's related to vaccination response, because there are kind of a fairly consistent literature, both with respect to experimental studies where they brought people into the lab and deprived them of sleep and compared them to people who slept normally after getting a vaccine, for instance. And they find that, you know, that people who are in the sleep deprivation condition just mount fewer antibodies over time compared to, you know, people who sleep normally. We've also done this work, you know, outside of the laboratory, again, measuring people's sleep using kind of wrist-worn devices, and then finding that, you know, people who, again, get less sleep, you know, mount fewer antibodies to, in this case, both either the influenza virus as well as the hepatitis B vaccination series. And then more recently, you know, we've been really interested in kind of like what, you know, does when does sleep seem to matter most when it comes to kind of the stages of vaccinations, right? I mean, like, which has important policy implications if you were trying to kind of boost anybody's immunity. And in our small study, which certainly needs to be replicated, we looked at kind of healthy individuals, young adults that were in, college students, I'm guessing, that, you know, were given the influenza vaccine. And we had, again, had measured their sleep at this time using just a diary where people report on their sleep. And what we found was that of the nights that we measured their sleep around when they got the vaccine, it was if they slept less on the little amount of sleep that they got on the night before the vaccine or the night before that predicted their antibody levels 1 month and 4 months later. And so, you know, it suggested that, you know, that might be like an important temporal piece. Yeah. But again, you know, this was a really small study. And so we need to kind of learn more because in the experimental studies, it's always focused on basically the sleep that people get right after the vaccine. And that has been predictive and it just wasn't in our study. So I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, but these are answerable questions, right? Like that, you know, we are able to measure sleep out in the world, either by report or by kind of devices. You know, lots of people are getting vaccinated. And so, you know, hopefully as this, you know, as time goes on, we'll have a lot of data to inform this question.
Definitely. Yeah. And like you said, there's something there, even if it's a small study, you know, maybe that's something that needs to be investigated further, but you know, there's definitely answers there. I don't know if you can answer this question, but do you think that is there anything differentiating like the COVID-19 virus from other viruses or any infectious diseases that can affect sleep? Like, is there anything different about the COVID-19 virus that would maybe play a different role in sleep?
Well, so, you know, I mean, I think it is something that is a little bit challenging because in trying to kind of pinpoint, you know, what is sleep affecting kind of someone's immunity that after they get infected or in some cases get vaccinated, and how much of it is kind of the impact of the virus or the vaccine on someone's sleep, right? Because one of the things that which is not always the case for other viruses. I mean, there's certainly vaccines or viruses that kind of, you know, produce fever, produce all of these other ailments that we see with, say, getting in some people who get the vaccine or, you know, when they get, obviously when they get, you know, COVID-19. And so, because, you know, the immune system plays a really important role in regulating our sleep too, right? Like just think about the last time that you were sick and how that changed your sleep behavior. You know, we have these sickness behaviors where we kind of spend a lot of more time kind of resting, you know, away from other people, and our sleep architecture has changed as well. And so, you know, that does make it a little bit challenging when we kind of measure people's sleep, say, kind of after they're exposed. Because, you know, it could be that, you know, people got less sleep and that predicts, kind of a worse response, but it could be that they got less sleep or worse sleep because of the actual exposure. And so that just kind of complicates things. We need kind of corroborating evidence. So, you know, for instance, we are, in this cohort that I mentioned, we, in like 200 of them, we gave them devices. We used the Oura Ring, which is it's a ring-based, you know, wearable for measuring sleep and heart rate and, you know, temperature and all these sorts of things, and has been shown in another prior study that kind of temperature fluctuations post vaccination, as it can actually predict kind of people's responses to the vaccine later on, and so, you know, it's a question about, like, you know, that type of information, like changes in heart rate, changes in temperature, might help us understand how much of what we're seeing is due to the viral exposure, the vaccine exposure, compared to in understanding someone's variation in their sleep than, you know, just actually, like, they just, you know, didn't get very much sleep that night, or, you know, other things were going on in their life that disturbed their sleep. And that might be help us kind of clean up the picture a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so that, I mean, I think that is something that's a little bit different, in considering this virus. Like, for instance, you know, the same concern came up when I did a study on the hepatitis B vaccination series. And so what we had to do was like, look at, you know, people's sleep before and after, and to at least get a sense of like, you know, did the exposure actually change someone's sleep? And that's what we're seeing. And in that case, it didn't, you know, but I think it really depends on the type of exposure that we're thinking about. And it turns out that the SARS-CoV-2 virus for many people and the vaccine itself can really have some impacts, at least in the short term, following kind of, you know, exposure.
In this research, whether it's regarding just infectious disease or also the vaccines, is there a particular population that you found that is more so affected by this?
So the literature itself hasn't kind of identified kind of particularly vulnerable groups, though. I mean, certainly there's a good case to be made for people that are, you know, their immune systems just aren't as robust. And so that would be anybody who has immunocompromised, right? Mm-hmm. Where kind of, or people as they get older. And we certainly know that age is the kind of the strongest predictor of both, you know, severe COVID and kind of poor vaccine response. And, you know, that's thought to be because, you know, the immune system just isn't as robust. And in fact, you know, if you look at the data, you know, 93% of all COVID-19 deaths in the US have been in 50 or older, right? So it's like, that's like, you know, it's certainly, that's an important risk factor. And so, you know, we targeted people that were 50 and older, because we thought we'd see more variability in their immune responses to the vaccine, because, you know, it's likely that we're going to need that type of variability to get any kind of signal for some of these other factors that we're interested in, whether it's sleep or stress or, you know, what have you. And I mean, the data isn't out, so we'll find out. I mean, on one hand, I'm like, maybe we'll find nothing, and that's great news, right? Like, it's like, yeah. Hey, those things don't matter. Like, it's you know, the vaccine is what it is, and people don't have to worry so much. Because I mean, I will say, when we started this project, I would get emails and phone calls, you know, daily about people worrying that they didn't get enough sleep, and, you know, should they get vaccinated? And I was like, yes, you should get vaccinated. And then they were like, well, now what do I do? And, you know, this happened, like, how do I know that the vaccine's working? And, you know, those kind of things. We just need, we need the data. We need the information, because people do think a lot about these things, and, you know, we can inform that.
Definitely. And yeah, like you said, like, the data's not there. I feel like anything related to COVID is all being investigated in real time. We don't have the luxury of being like, let's look back at this research on this, because it's all happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think our immunity isn't maintained forever, and kind of changes in the viral environment with respect to kind of emerging variants. Really, we need to get on this to try to figure out what is there out there that's helping us explain who does well, who doesn't do well, beyond kind of just genetics and kind of your age, you know, because there are likely modifiable factors. And, you know, I think sleep is one of those, but that's important, but there are probably a whole host of them that can put people in a better position as we move forward in the world that we have now.
A little off topic, but what could you say about the use of like screen time? You know, like, we all know that like screen time is not good for sleep, and that, you know, all the lights in your face. What's the biggest thing, I guess, that you know that has shifted since smartphones and technology has really taken over? Like, how much of a role does that actually play in our sleep quality?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, I should have mentioned that I also help run a sleep clinic here at UCSF where we treat people with insomnia. And, you know, this comes up all the time. And I think, you know, certainly there's some evidence that, you know, blue light exposure can kind of impact your circadian system. But, you know, for my money, I think it's a lot about the content and what people engage with, right? Like, so the things on our devices, they're developed to kind of keep you engaged, right? And people like select into things that keep them engaged. And, you know, so that reward system in your brain is kind of going off every time you get an email, every time you kind of scroll down in Twitter or your next Instagram post. And you know, that is incompatible with relaxing and falling asleep, right? And so, you know, I think that is a bigger culprit with respect to screen time. But I mean, that being said, you know, like, that's why kind of ensuring a wind down, you know, say 2 hours before, and kind of like doing that transition to where, you know, you kind of move from your day to your kind of evening and night, is really critical. And, you know, for some people, kind of engaging in things in social media or on their screens or what have you can be relaxing. But I think if people are having trouble sleeping, for instance, that's something that you can kind of think about as like a potential intervention point, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess that's, you know, I think, I don't know if screen time has gone up over the pandemic. It probably has. It certainly has for my kids, right? Like it's, and it's really hard to figure out how to undo that. But you know, I think moderation is obviously the key when it comes to sleep. I think prioritizing it, ensuring that, you know, you put it kind of on the same level playing field of all the other behaviors that you want to enhance in your life, whether it be nutrition, whether it be physical activity, you know, sleep will help you do all those things better. And we know that. So it should also kind of get that same kind of airtime as far as kind of protecting it and promoting it.
Yeah, certainly. So you're saying it's not so much about the screen itself, but the engagement of what you're engaging with.
I'm not saying that it's not the screen itself, but I mean, I would say of the two things, it probably plays less of a role. Certainly people might be particularly sensitive to kind of that type of wavelength of light. And we know from the science that it certainly can impact your melatonin production system. But I think, so for a lot of people, the solution has been, well, I'll put a night shift filter on my phone and then I've solved the problem. And lo and behold, it doesn't solve the problem because that's not all of the problem, right? And I think that's something that is often missed in that discussion.
Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to tune in to our next episode of Doc Talk.